Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to a hot first, I'm going to say the first real day of summer's edition of the Hoop Talks NBA podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Robson, joined by Sean Woodley. Sean, is the hammer as hot as it is in Toronto today?
It is, and it sucks. I hate this weather so much.
Are you too pasty for summer?
No, I'm not too pasty. Like, I crisp up brown and nice, but like, I don't like being hot all the time. I don't like sticking to chairs when I'm on a patio. I don't like having to change clothes when I get home. I don't like it. It's bad. It's too hot. Like, on the radio today, I was like driving into work, and like, it was like, oh yeah, this is what we've been waiting for. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, give me the 12 degrees every day thing that we had for a little while there. That's the best weather. 12 degrees every day. I want to live in Portland.
I mean, 12's pushing it. I'll take like, maybe in the high teens would be nice.
No, I just want to wear like a nice comfortable sweater with some jeans and some shoes and not be like just like uncomfortable in everything I'm wearing. Because like, you can always layer up and get warmer, but you can't.
It's fair.
You can't, whatever the hell I'm thinking. You can't.
Take your clothes off.
Yeah, you can't just walk around naked all over the place.
Not all of us.
No.
Some of us can't. Yeah. You know, some of us that are gods. In the flesh. Speaking of low teens, are we talking about temperature or the Warriors' shooting percentage in the fourth quarter last night?
Gee, I'll grant you that segue. It was all right. Yeah, that was a. We had a fun game. It was awesome.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, I flipped it off for a little bit in the middle of the second quarter. I was like, this is done. This feels over, and then came back. I was like, oh god, it's close, it's exciting, it's fun. And then the fourth quarter, man, like that was like, it felt almost like game 7 of Warriors Cavs in 2016, just like the intensity and just like the inability of either team to really do anything offensively. And I don't know, I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. I know people don't like the Rockets, but I'm rooting for the Rockets to win because I like them more than the Warriors. They're more fun. And Chris Paul is criminally underrated and disregarded by some people, which is stupid as hell because, like, as he showed last night, he's a goddamn boss. But, like, this is a game like that kind of, I don't know, it makes me more at ease about the Warriors being the Warriors and the inevitability that comes with them because, like, I don't mind having a super team as long as there's, like, a challenge to them, right? Like, it was compelling, I think, with the Heat, for example, because they lost their first season and then, you know, the Thunder, while that was a 5-game series in 2013 or whatever, 2012, like, that was still a close series and a fun series and, like, you could kind of see the percolating sort of powerhouse that the Thunder were going to be until they got rid of their two best MVPs. And then, like, the Spurs series were awesome both ways. And like, the one in 2013 is an all-time classic for that reason. Like, it was a super team being challenged to the absolute brink by a very good team that obviously ended up winning the next season. And this feels kind of like that. Like, the Warriors have been, like, not fun to watch for me the last 2 years because it just feels like any time they want, Kevin Durant's going to hit a bucket. And there's not a team out there that has a gear that can match them. But the Rockets last night and throughout this series have kind of showed that, yeah, like, they have that gear. And, yeah, they got shit-canned in Game 3. But it's really fun to watch maybe the best team of all time actually have to try. Maybe, I guess that's the best way to put it. Like, it's really cool that they have to try in this series. And even if it ends up being, like, a 6-game series win for the Warriors, which I'm still not convinced it'll be, but I would still bet on the Warriors winning the series. Like, I'm glad we got to see a real challenge to them because that ultimately makes it okay with me that there's a super team that is just probably going to win the next 3 titles because as long as they're challenged and it's compelling and like there's the thrill of the chase, I can make my peace with it.
Yeah, like I was listening to the Jenkins and Jones podcast the other day and they were complaining about the people that you see on Twitter now who are upset that people don't like the Warriors and you need to respect the greatness and enjoy watching it. But
oh my god, it's so extremely NBA Twitter to argue about how much you're supposed to like the Warriors. It's exhausting.
Yeah, well, that's the point, right? And they say they point back to the Jordan Bulls of the 90s and the Lakers of the 80s, but those teams had challengers, right? Like, even the Celtics, there was always a worthy challenger to that were ready to knock them off and push those teams. Like, those Jordan Bulls teams always had someone push them to 6 or 7 games in a conference finals and then in the finals before that. So I think you're right. Like, as long as there's a worthy challenger, and why we watch sports is because you're in it for the inevitability of what's going to happen. You don't know the outcome. Mm-hmm. So I think that having this worthy challenger in the Rockets, as long as this series goes 6 or 7, you can feel rewarded as a basketball fan. And I think that, like, Houston likes their chances now. Best 2 out of 3 with 2 games in Houston. I think you can't really ask for a better situation if you want to try to pull the upset.
Yeah, and, like, I think the fact that they responded to that crazy, like, super-duper Warriors third quarter without, like, just turtling over and dying. Like, I think the Warriors, I saw the stat, when they win a third quarter by 10 or more points, they're 30-0 this season. And, like, they won the third quarter by 17 last night and lost. Like, that is kind of crazy for the Rockets to be the first team to sort of weather that storm and still, like, have the will and fight and, like, be within enough points, I guess, to really make a comeback. And what did you think happened to the Warriors down the stretch last night? Because, like, I going into the fourth quarter, I was like, all right, this is over. Like, there's no way the Rockets are coming back. I actually made a tweet that was a joke that was like, maybe the Rockets will come back. And then they did, which is fucking crazy because I did not expect that. But, like, what do you think happened to the Warriors? Was it just, like, Durant having a weird bad shooting game and, like, Curry being unsustainably hot in the third and then, like, predictably falling off on the fourth? Like, is that, like, I don't really know that the Rockets did anything, like, just, like, genius to stop them. It just felt like it was just two good teams who were kind of not shooting very well. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it almost had kind of that Game 7 of 2016 vibes where both teams were so gassed. Mm-hmm. They were just putting up shots. And, like, the Warriors now are basically down to 6 guys, especially if Iguodala can't play again. And this is, like, for as much as Golden State's lauded for what they do with their player development and everything, it doesn't change the fact that they have 6 centers on the team for really no reason at all. And, like, when they had to rely on Swaggy P for 14 minutes, that really screwed them because he's a complete negative at the defensive end. And if he's not making his threes, what's the point of him being out there? And I think you saw that with, like, Draymond being totally gassed, he couldn't be that primary main defender for them. And without Iguodala, you don't really have that other wing to kind of lock up Harden or Paul on a switch or stay with Ariza if you want to keep him from shooting corner threes. And you saw it especially with the rebounding. Was the Warriors were so tired. And when they had, like, Jordan Bell as the center out there, he just wasn't kind of ready for that moment. And, like, midway through that fourth quarter, there were so many times where the Rockets got 2 or 3 extra possessions from either Ariza or Tucker flying in. So I think that's kind of the blueprint you have to stick with if you're Houston moving forward.
Yeah, this series has been so interesting because, like, I mean, both teams are down to small rotations, right? Because it's the kind of series where any sort of little flaw is going to make you unplayable. And, like, even Clint Capella, who is awesome and is going to get, like, the bag this summer as a restricted free agent, like, that dude is, like, barely playable in this series. And centers just don't seem to have a place in this series. It's kind of weird considering, like, where we've come from in the NBA, like, to just... there was always, like, yeah, the small ball is going to take over, but it always felt like there was a place for at least, like, one big guy out there with, like, a double-digit, like, inches next to the 6 foot, but there's not really. Like, it's...
Especially even Clint Capella, who's, like, if not the fastest center in the NBA, like, one of the two.
Yeah, it's the fact that he can't shoot kind of, you know, is his big sort of liability, and every single guy on the team sort of has one of those little things. Except for the guys who are playing all the minutes, right? And it's like, you know, even Eric Gordon is not a good defensive player, and he was kind of bad last night. He was 1 of 8 from deep, but, like, having him, like, I do think, like, the Rockets, their high variance thing is kind of playing out in this series, right? Like, they didn't shoot particularly well last night, only shot 39%, but, like, they still put up 38 threes. And, like, when you do that, you're going to give yourself a chance to, like, just happen into a couple extra points here and there. So that kind of played into it. But yeah, I really am enjoying the series just because it feels like the absolute highest possible level of basketball maybe that we've, like, ever seen. Like, yeah, that finals in 2016 was amazing, but, like, it just feels like there's, like, so little margin for error for either of these teams, and, like, that's not usually the case. Like, usually, like, the Warriors can screw around a little bit and have 2 quarters where they sleep and just, like, blow a team away in the third and it's done. But it's cool to see a team that sort of even limits the Warriors' margin for error, which normally, like, they can do whatever they want. Going into the fourth, like, what would you, like, in your head, what were your odds of the Rockets actually coming back and winning the game?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really think they had a chance because, like you said, they didn't really shoot the ball that well. I think the Daryl Morey quote that Ramona Shelburne had was hilarious when he said he just had to leave the arena and stood outside and had his wife text him the score updates. But yeah, I mean, Chris Paul, though, like, he really took over, I think, late. And the fact that Harden and Paul, and you know Harden, you can kind of see on his face when he gets shook and checks out, and that never happened last night.
Except for that on that wide open three.
Yeah. But when they were kind of pushed to the brink, right? Like, if you go down 3-1, there's no way you're winning this series at all.
Yeah.
So the fact they were the more desperate team, I think, really played out. And D'Antoni's kind of done a good job of doing whatever, pushing whatever buttons it takes, whether he came out and said, like, first and all, they played way too soft, and then flipping it and saying Golden State had all the pressure. Like, his guys are behind him, I think, 110%. And then you kind of saw the opposite of it with Steve Kerr. I think it was Tim Kawakami had that. Kerr called that timeout after they gave up that first bucket when it was 12-2 in the first quarter to try to stop the lazy passes and the kind of showboat and stuff they were doing, but it didn't really take, right, because they were up so much. And then that's just kind of the lackadaisicalness that can, like, kind of set in for that team, and then you see it in the fourth quarter when it just becomes Durant and Curry trading isolations. And I think that's where the Durant thing can be so good for you when you need a guy to bail you out, but then when you get into a game where some ball movement would have been, like, exactly what the doctor ordered in that situation to get them back going, they just ended up playing like, let's trade isos between Curry and Durant, and the shots were so ugly.
Man, it seemed like every single time the Warriors, like, ran something, they were scoring. It was like, oh yeah, we're gonna have, like, Draymond cut baseline, or we're gonna run a pick and roll and Draymond's gonna score. Like, it just felt like they were, anytime they made a pass, they were scoring. And that, like, they kind of went away from that in the fourth, and, like, they got really, like, Raptors-y in crunch time.
I was about to say, it was very much like watching Lowry and DeRozan trade possessions, because there were so many times where Clay and Draymond are just standing in the corners and already walking back on D. Yeah. Like, it was bad.
Also, they like kind of looked scared in crunch time as well, right? Like, they looked a little shook. I love the sound of Oracle when things aren't going well for the Warriors.
God,
it's like, it's beautiful. I love that shit.
It's because they act like this is factual, and you can say they haven't seen the team lose.
Yeah, yeah. And they kind of almost feel at this point like they're entitled to victories, and when it doesn't happen, they're like, what the fuck, man? But, like, the last minute, there was, like, a minute on the clock, and they had a possession where it was, like, a really quick three, miss, and then, like, offensive rebound, and then really quick three again from Steph, and it was like chill, like, you're only down.
Yeah, he loves putting up that early shot clock three.
Yeah, it was like 94-91 at that point, and it was just like, guys, like, you don't have to be, like, just chucking away. I know you're the Warriors and all, but, like, relax a little bit. Like, you're fine. Like, if you run something, you're probably gonna score on the Rockets. And then, like, there was the weird shit where, like, I didn't have a problem with them not calling a timeout after what was it? I don't even know now.
I'm fine.
The whole series, the whole sequence of events at the end of the game is kind of foggy to me at this point.
They missed that shot. Chris Paul gets the rebound, right?
Yeah.
And I don't even know how they came up with 5/10 of a second, because you see in the replay, Mike Callahan doesn't call the foul until 1/10 of a second. So I'm not really sure how that happened. But then Paul goes to the line after you miss the first one. I don't know why you don't just miss the second, because a rebound is going to take more than 5/10 of a second.
Yeah, like, there's no way you can call a timeout. And, like, I think the most you just, like, to move your hand to make a T is like less than, is more than half a second, right? Like, that probably would have ended the game. That was weird. The bigger thing for me, though, was the Warriors not calling a timeout in the possession where Clay missed that shot, because, like, or was it Clay that missed the?
Durant was, that was when Durant had shook, because he had a couple, like, bad misses off the side of the backboard. So he gave it off to Clay. And I even though I think the conventional wisdom is call a timeout, in a situation like that with the guys you have, I can't really blame Kerr for it, because then you're letting the defense get set up too if you
I agree with that. Like, initially, whatever, they had like 12 or 15 seconds or whatever once they got the rebound, I guess, off the last Rockets miss. Like, they had a ton of time to come down and run something, but when, like, Klay Thompson's hemmed in the corner and there's nothing developing and Trevor Ariza's draped all over him, you have 5 seconds. Like, you don't have to sit there and, like, let the play out. Like, you have your timeout. Obviously, they ended up using the timeout after the whole foul thing, but, like, maybe you don't have to use that anyway, because you draw something up out of the timeout, and, like, you just, you get something cleaner off of that. Like, you just kind of get to reset it a little bit. You're the Warriors. You draw great out-of-bounds plays all the time. Like, I think once you saw that play develop or not develop at all, like, that's when they should have called the timeout with, like, 5 seconds left. And, like, that's plenty of time to draw something up. You only needed 2 at that point to tie. So, like, I don't know. Trust in yourself as the Warriors to draw an out-of-bounds play. Like, it's not that hard. But, yeah, no, that was weird. Also, TSN almost missed the potential game-tying bucket from Steph Curry at the end.
Yeah, I was looking at my phone, and then it came back up, and you said, Curry! Oh!
Yeah. Like, Marv Albert died on screen, and it was, yeah, they like just like stuck in a NASCAR promo during the timeout, and then just like were late coming back, I guess, so that was weird, but...
Master control guy asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, glad we didn't miss that.
Most stuff.
Yeah. No, that was a fun-ass game. Made up for a lot of really shitty basketball over the last couple weeks, I gotta say. Like, as much as these conference finals have kind of blown, we're kind of set up for the perfect finish with both series at 2-2 and, like, both... I think all four teams kind of believe they can win.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of fun. I'm excited for what's coming in the next couple days.
Yeah, and I think that now that we're at the point where there's no longer these long layoffs in between games,
Yeah. You're
no longer kind of languishing in the storylines of, like, one team's awful, one team's great, which is kind of the overreactionary part of where we're at.
Yeah. So I'm not reading a single take about anything the next three games. I'm just going to watch them and have fun.
Just watch it. Yeah.
Well, you want to get to what we were going to do today? Sorry, I was stifling a burp.
Oh, wonderful. So tonight we will be watching Cavs-Celtics. I'm sure you will be watching Cavs-Celtics as well.
Speak for yourself. Caps-Lightning Game 7, baby.
That's the second screen. You got to have the two screens.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely watching Cavs-Celtics.
Do you think Cleveland has enough momentum to get a win in Boston, or is home Boston just too much of a juggernaut?
Is it a cop out to say I have no goddamn clue? Like, I can't get a gauge on the stupid Cavs. They either shit their pants or wear fresh white linen pants that are completely clean. That is not a very good descriptor, but like that, it's just, it's weird. I can't figure out what to expect from the Cavs night to night. Honestly, in those last two games, like when they started well, I was like, oh, okay, they're gonna win this game. Like, it felt over, but like, I don't know, in Boston, it's kind of different. There's a different dynamic there. You're gonna have Bill Simmons and his people chanting very lame ass taunts at LeBron, apparently.
What the hell was that tweet? Those are straight from the brain of his 8-year-old son. Like, you are smelly.
Hey, LeBron, my mom could beat up your mom.
Yeah, that's a bit much.
Oh, man. I'm rooting extremely hard for the Cavs to win. I want them to win. I know they've been in the finals a million years in a row, but like, the Celtics are still gross, and... they're gonna have their time, and I still like LeBron pulling this shit out of his ass with Kyle Korver being a second best player would be pretty compelling to me, I gotta say.
And I would like a J.R. Smith revenge game, because you know the fans are gonna be like ravage on him after his little Alberford shove.
I mean, that was bullshit week. From J.R. Smith.
Yeah, it was terrible, but he admitted it, so.
Yeah, it's true. After he didn't get suspended. That was very bad. Oh, yeah.
I don't know if the Cavs supporting cast will play up to the capabilities you see at home, or whether will this finally be the game that like the Celtics young guns kind of crack under the pressure. But like, I don't know, Jason Tatum in that building has just been like an all-star level player, and I don't see that really changing.
Yeah, I honestly think the Tristan Thompson, Al Horford thing is so, like, you can't even deny that it's a very real thing at this point. Like, it just is. Like, Tristan Thompson just kind of eats Al Horford and has done so for the last few playoffs. And, like, I do think the Cavs have kind of figured the thing out there where they just kind of match their minutes. And that's kind of neutralizing Horford as much as you can neutralize him. And then, like, it's interesting because, like, the whole Warriors-Rockets series is, like, built on switching, and, like, both teams are pretty much okay with doing that. And there's not really, like, an easy spot for teams to attack when that happens. Like, maybe Harden, but, like, I think the Rockets are pretty happy if they switch everything and, like, they can live with that. Whereas, like, the Celtics are a team where there's, like, a very real, like, point of attack. If Terry Rozier is going to be out there, like, he's just, the Cavs are going to hunt that forever and ever and ever, and LeBron's going to beat that forever and ever and ever whenever they want to. And, like, I'm curious to see how the Celtics sort of respond to that, because, like, you can't just not play Terry Rozier, because they don't really have anyone, and, like, I don't think you want 48 minutes of Marcus Smart, like, breaking threes, as much as Marcus Smart is, like, a, you know, whatever, like, ethereal player. Like, no, like, you can't have him out there. Like, Rozier is just a better player at this point, but... Like, that's, like, a weakness that no, LeBron found the weaknesses against the Raptors too. And like you saw it, like whenever Pascal Siakam or CJ Miles was on him, he was just like, okay, I'm going to drive by this guy and I'm going to score and it's going to be easy. And like that kind of is what happened with Terry Rozier. And like, credit the Celtics, they have a lot of dudes who they can throw at LeBron and sort of passively guard him. But like the way that they're playing defense, it's kind of, you know, working against them right now. So that's something interesting. I'm not going to count against LeBron. I'm not betting against LeBron in a best of three series. Like, I can't do it. I bet against LeBron against the Raptors. I picked the Raptors to win. That was fucking dumb. And I knew it was going to be dumb as soon as I did it. So I can't do it. I think the Cavs are going to win. I wouldn't be surprised if they won in six. Like, I think if they win tonight, it's not going back to Boston. And I think I am going to take the Cavs to win tonight. But I mean, again, I could be wrong. Because guess what? We're all idiots. None of us know anything. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now.
No, I agree. And for as deep as the stats want to like tell the story, I think it gets to like as simplistic as like LeBron's tied this thing up now with two like great performances at home. He's not going to lose another game in Boston.
Yeah.
And now that like the teammates are back up on swinging on a high right now, and like I think Korver will have a good night once again. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to let them lose this game because he does not want to go back there for a game seven, especially when he now knows that like whoever they play, Rockets or Warriors in the next round, is probably going to have gone a hard six or seven games.
Yeah.
And for his team to have any chance, he knows they need to be well rested, because if they want to have any chance at winning a title, you're going to have to rely on the vets, and the vets need rest.
Yeah, I also just wonder, like, at what point does, like, the thing that Raptors fans have seen creep into their team? Like, at what point does the LeBron psychological factor come in? Like, he was so damn good in game four, and like to be up 2-0 has to feel so good. And then, yeah, you know, they come back, LeBron has two great games, and like they're sitting there tied at two, and like you're sitting there staring down the barrel of a best of three against LeBron. Like, at some point I feel like the psychological thing comes in there too, right? Like, as well as the Celtics have played and as much as they don't seem afraid of the moment, like LeBron does this to everybody and everyone eventually cracks. And I wonder if that comes in game five, if like LeBron starts off really well, has a big first or second quarter, and like does the thing that he did against the Raptors where he just like played horse against himself. Like, I wonder if that kind of creeps
fades,
in.
Hitting some deep threes.
Yeah, like I don't know. Yeah. That like it's all very like not very like grounded in analysis at all, but like that just seems to happen in every single series LeBron plays against an Eastern Conference team. And like, I wonder if, having been up 2-0, I wonder if the Celtics might just like lose steam after losing that lead.
I think so too. And LeBron's had just so many historical performances in there, and you know he's going to be charged up, I think, for this. Mm-hmm. I think we might see a good game from Kevin Love.
It'd be nice if you're the Cavs for that to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to write off the Celtics totally, because I think that would be stupid. But I'm also like about not giving Brad Stevens any credit, because like when the Celtics lost these two games, but there were no takes about how Brad Stevens did anything wrong. So, you know.
Yeah, that's exhausting. Who do you think, so like sitting here both series at 2-2, what would you say is your most likely finals matchup? Let's rank the four finals matchups by how likely you think they're going to happen.
Okay, I'll go 4-1 here.
Okay.
So I'm going to go Boston, Houston as my least likely.
Okay.
My next least likely would probably be Boston, Golden State.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I will go I'm going to go Cleveland, Golden State, Cleveland, Houston.
Woo!
I have to speak it into existence, or else it's just not going to happen.
So you want the Rockets to win? You're not one of these people who's like, "Oh, the Rockets, I don't like Chris Paul."
Okay, here's something. Yeah, no. First of all, like they're doing a big thing for the Santa Fe High School. They're bringing all the kids from the school of the game. They're doing a big tribute.
That's dope.
So that's really awesome. That's going to be like an emotional building, charged up building too, with a lot of energy. I think they're going to come out with a good start again. And then you can kind of say, like, if the Warriors don't hit their first couple shots in that game, I know in game one it was the same story and Golden State kind of stormed back and won pretty easily. But I think with kind of the lineups that D'Antoni's found that work now, they might be able to cut some of that stuff earlier if Golden State mounts their comeback, which you know they're going to. But I need some new blood. And I think if the Warriors only win 2 championships out of the last 4 years, we don't have to suffer through a whole summer of the Warriors have absolutely ruined the league and why do anything because there's no chance of anything ever.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. I kind of think last night's game on its own might have helped sort of quiet that conversation a little bit. And like the fact that it's at 2-2 is kind of nice. And like they kind of ran through the league in their first title season, but like at least there were a couple challenges. Like Memphis, I remember Memphis was up 2-1 at one point, and then obviously the Cavs were up 2-1 as well. Like those were like actual challenges to them, even though it wasn't really ultimately all that dire for them. So I kind of think just like the Rockets doing this is almost enough, which is weird to say. But like that game last night, I think has kind of a lot of power to change the narrative of like the whole Warriors dominance thing. But yeah, in terms of most likely finals, I'll say, probably Houston, Boston. And then I'll go, God, I want to say the Warriors are going to lose the series. I just don't think they are. So I'm going to go Houston, Cleveland. They'll go Golden State, Boston, Golden State, Cleveland. I don't feel good about it, but I also, I've picked with my heart way too much lately and it hasn't worked particularly well. So I'm just going to go with, good old inertia. It's,
well, there you go.
Yeah.
Quick thing here. What has been your most laughable NBA rumor of the past week?
Oh, man. Probably the Karl Towns stuff. Like,
yeah, you're not all in on like one person on a podcast saying things aren't great and then making every trade scenario and saying he's going to Boston.
Oh my God.
Come on.
Like, I really, really, really love the Low Simmons podcasts, because Low just like, nah, you're dumb, Bill. Like, move on to the next thing. Like, he'll just not acknowledge a dumb Simmons take. But yeah, no, the Karl Towns thing is stupid. Like, of all the things that are going to move out of Minnesota, Karl Towns is the last of them, right? Like, they would fire Tom Thibodeau before getting rid of Karl Towns on a rookie contract. Like, don't forget that. That's like gold. They would trade Andrew Wiggins before getting rid of Karl Towns. They would probably just like let Jimmy Butler walk next summer as opposed to getting rid of Karl Towns. Like, he is so good and has been, I think, a victim of a really shitty situation where they just can't get the coach right there. Like, I don't think Tibbs is the right guy there. They can't get the mix of players right. Like, they have like weird contracts like Gorgui Dieng and then just like old dudes up and down the roster. And like old Bulls, it's a depressing ass team, man. And I don't know what they really do, because I don't know how they trade Wiggins' contract and get something substantial back. I know Zach said on that podcast that like they could probably get something of, you know, slightly improved value in return for him, but
yeah,
I don't know, man. It's a big contract, and there's no room for teams to work with this summer, and I don't know. It just seems kind of tricky. But yeah, Karl Towns is not going to the Phoenix Suns. Like, let's just, please chill out. Like, even if it was the first overall pick.
There was a tweet.
Yeah, even if it was the first overall pick. Like, yeah, I don't think that's enough for Minnesota. Like, that's not enough. Like, Karl Towns is what you hope a first round pick becomes, a first overall pick becomes.
Well, exactly, and that's the thing, right? A best case scenario, I think, you can hope for is a Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if the Suns want to take DeMar DeRozan, then it's a different story. But are you not in for that trade? DeMar DeRozan, Pascal Siakam, and a future?
I'd be fine with it. I don't know why the Suns do that.
Because
that would be stupid. Either, the only team that's in the lottery that I'm like talking myself into trading their pick for DeMar DeRozan is Memphis.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Because like,
unless you want to trade Gasol and Conley away, you're kind of stuck in between a rebuild and guys you want to compete.
And I just like, if you're Memphis, like, and you want to get back to being relevant, like, the blueprint is right there. A better center than Jonas Valanciunas and Marc Gasol, although he's older, and then like pretty comparable point guard in Mike Conley, maybe a little bit worse, like. That could potentially work with DeMar DeRozan in that mix. Like, that has worked. That's been something that works around DeMar before. And, like, maybe, because Memphis is weird and does dumb shit all the time. So, like, they're the one team I'm talking myself into. This is not a Raptors podcast, but they're the one team I'm talking myself into doing some dumb shit and trading the fourth pick for DeMar and some stuff. So,
We're almost there at full rumor season with no more basketball to watch. How excited are you?
I hate rumor season. I love, like, after July 4th or whatever, I love that shit. I love, or I guess July 1st, whenever the hell it all happens. Like, actual things start to happen. I love it. It's awesome. Rumors are terrible. The draft is fun, I guess, but it's never quite as fun as we make it out to be. There's never quite the trades that we think are going to be happening at the draft. Jimmy Butler was nice last season, but other than that, like, it's usually pretty quiet. And, like, the fun stuff is over in, like, an hour. But, yeah, no, I'm excited. Like, I was, like, kind of feeling a little bummed out after, even while the Raptors were still playing. I was like, these series aren't that good. The Raptors are shitting themselves. It's dark. It's depressing. But, like, I'm fully back in. Like, I'm excited to watch these games to close out the conference finals. I'm embracing whatever happens in the finals, whether it's the goddamn Celtics or Warriors, Cavs 4. I'm excited. And the... at the very least, the rumors this summer will, like, maybe they won't be substantial, maybe they won't be real, but, like, they'll involve very big players, because it's going to be a wild-ass summer, so I'm excited for that.
I think we all are. And anything for you to plug this week?
No, like, you're going to be on Locked On Raptors, that we're going to record directly after we're done recording this, reviewing the season of Serge Ibaka, so that'll
be... yeah, if you want to hear some jokes... when you tune in.
We did one about OG Anunoby yesterday. Not you and I, but me and Matt Shantz from Raptors Republic. We did that. Reviewed OG's season. That's about it for me right now. I'm kind of figuring out what I want to write and stuff. But we'll see when that all happens and transpires. But yeah, that's Twitter at Woodley Sean, all that stuff.
Summer beer reviews coming from you? I would read that.
A not insignificant part of my brain wants to go to brewing, go to brewing college. I'm not gonna lie.
I will buy your independent IPA or whatever you come up with. I'll
a be basketball a, I'll be themed a brewery? Brand. That's an idea. Yeah.
I'll be a brand ambassador.
We don't use hops. We use hoops.
That's where we're going to end this week, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Next Hoop Talks events, get ready to drink Woodley IPAs.
Hell yeah. Maybe we should plug that. The starter is June 29th at the Royal Theater. Get your damn tickets. It's going to be so elegant. Awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty exclusive. I would probably buy a ticket for that if I had, you know.
I would definitely recommend it. Because they were here last summer. Actually, last summer was just Lee and Skeets, and it was awesome. I believe the whole crew is coming up this time, which is even more awesome. So make sure you buy your tickets.
They are good people. Rye High, better than Carlton, and another just avenue, you know?
Vomit everywhere. Gross.
Does anyone on Carlton have a show on NBA TV? No, I don't think so.
Well, I might one day. If you believe in the power of me and you.
I'm sure that pitch would go over well.
Why not? Hey, they've already had white guys from Canada on their station, on their air. Why not have
a white guy and another almost white guy. That's diversity, folks. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of the Hoop Talks NBA podcast. We'll be back at you next week with some either LeBron love reaction, some Celtics crying reaction, Warriors tears, or Rockets exuberance.
How about all of the above?
Okay, sure.
Take it easy, man.